I suspected that that sort of perk, you know, the long form of that word is perquisite. So everybody says perk. Was available to service members. I'm glad it is. That is marvelous that you can do that, that you have done that. I have been in conversation with people who are not of my generation, and with people who whose first language is not my own, and they speak English fairly well or broken. Yeah, there's some challenges, but if you have an opportunity, this is an opportunity. You should see it coming. I spoke with a young, she wasn't terribly young even then. She was probably in her late 80s and had survived the Titanic, the sinking of the Titanic in 1912. I was in Pontiac at the time, Pontiac, Michigan, and working for the school district there. And my job was to go around and sell adult education to people. Well, right across the street from where I lived was a big seniors community, hundreds of seniors. So I saw that as a minefield, you know, not a minefield, a glory hole, let's call it that. And so I spent almost 3 months in going house to house, talking to the seniors about the availability and the benefits of adult education. It was free to them. Transportation was free, and it was, I mean, they had a big high school there, new and modern, and you could just take any kind of class that they offered. So what I was given that night, to listen to her speak of her husband who went down with the Titanic, and of their romance, it would be a long time before the movie came out. If you ever saw Titanic, it was so similar to that. And she was so well spoken. She could tell a story. She had me enthralled. And then there was a lady who attended my church. Her first language was German. We were brought together because of, you know, I was president of the congregation at the time. And we had business that we had to accomplish. But then there was times when we could just talk about how she grew up and how I grew up. It's a good conversation, you know. And she would pepper her conversation with words in German. After a while, I could pick up on that. And I never studied, although my last name is German. Kinsler is my last name. And that is Germanic. But I never learned to speak any language but the one I'm using right now. Laziness, I suppose. But she was, her name was Tony. That might have been short for something, but I never knew about any other name, Tony. And when she was younger, she had to be a knockout because she was in her 70s and still very attractive. She was very careful with her makeup, and she exercised a lot. She was just a very attractive person, very interesting person. So yeah, I have commiserated, you might say, with people that I don't really talk well with, And you should never pass that chance up. It's just, it's always a big gift. KK4JBQ.
That's pretty interesting, really. But you're exactly right. I don't pass up the opportunity to try to do something new. I'm ashamed to say, even if it is possibly has the potential to be embarrassing for me, I don't let that hold me back. You know, I'm not good at everything, but I want to learn about everything as much as I can. And sometimes that can get you in trouble if you're in the right environment. I think the first thought that comes to mind is curiosity killed the cat, that kind of thing. But so let me tell you a little quick story about exactly what we're talking about here. So on the last deployment, right outside, we were stationed in Tallil, which if you get on Google and type in Tallil Air Force Base or the Ziggurat, the Ziggurat was probably about 1,500 meters right across from where I slept. And I'd get up every morning and see that awful looking monstrosity out in the middle of the desert. And, well, on the other side of that, of the Ziggurat, is supposedly where Daniel, the biblical Daniel, and his tribe lived. And you could go do a tour of the Ziggurat, and there was a local guy that would come from the town, and he would meet you there, and he would give you a tour. You could go inside, climb up top, and go look at the foundations left over from supposedly Daniel's tribe or whatnot. Well, at any rate, I kind of got sidetracked there, but right outside of the gate was in between our COB, which is a coalition operating base, and the town, there's a group of guys who came in and built a motlof, which is a big reed hut, probably 25 feet long, probably 10 feet wide, has an arched roof on it, just probably tons and tons of reed to build this thing. And people from the town would come to this area once a week and would host, they would allow so many soldiers, if you wanted to, and you were under armed escort, they had armed civilians, and we had armed soldiers that went to the area. And it was an attempt by them to make a connection. But you could just tell there was a little bit of distrust there, a little bit of uncertainty. But it was a place to go and meet the people and try to make a connection and meet and talk and blah, blah, blah. So they also would have prisoners come, Iraqi prisoners, not that the American forces had detained, but that the Iraqi populace had detained. And they did arts and crafts in prison. The town would, what they built in prison, the town would take it from them and bring it to this place and would try to sell it to raise money for the town. And sometimes the prisoners would come and they would showcase their birdhouse or some kind of wooden, it's usually made out of wood. And some of them were, you could tell they were really craftsmen, and some of them, you know, not so much. But at any rate, wanted to go into the Motlof, then it was understood that when you went in there, that you were going to have some, you were going to have some conversation with some people. And you came in, they had rugs on top of the earth inside this Motlof to get out of the sun, and black tea. And you came in, and you would sit down, and they would bring you, there would be a female, usually an older female, that would bring you some tea. And you sat down with four or five men from the town. And there was a definite order in how you conducted yourself. You had conversation with them first. You would tell about yourself as much as you wanted to. You didn't have to get, you know, personal or anything. And just have, you know, pleasant conversation. And then you got down to business and listened to them tell you, hey, what's going on in their town and how they're struggling with water and power and things like that and blah, blah, blah. Well, the point of this whole conversation is KO4NUE, in case anybody out there cares, for station ID. Older grandmother, I assume she was grandmother, she was older, and she made the desserts, or the snacks for the soldiers to, the ones that wanted to come in and have conversation. And dates with nuts and honey, that just wholesome kind of snack. There was no candy or anything like that. It was dates off of the local palm trees, and she had split them and pulled the pits out, laid them in a nice little tray, and put nuts and honey on it. I mean, it was really, really good. Well, I made the mistake of, when the conversation was over and we had our drank all our tea and this, that, and the other, I was exiting the Motlof, and I just kind of peeled off to the left and was going to tell the grandmother, thank you. There was an interpreter there to say what you wanted. They had their interpreter, we had ours. And that was my intent, was going to tell her that she reminded me of my grandmother and that her food was absolutely delicious. And, oh, man, that was a no-no. And I got told real quick, you want to speak to her, you go and talk with the men first, which I did. I got corrected, but instead of being corrected and exiting, I was trying to show them, hey, give me a chance to redeem myself here. So I had to explain to them what the situation was and why I wanted to talk to her. And once that was explained, one of the men, I mean, happily, they understood, and he got up and he escorted me back there with her with the interpreter. And I got to tell her exactly what I wanted to tell her, that, you know, I loved her food, I loved her snacks, and that she reminded me of my grandmother, and her name was Bernice, but we called her Meemaw, and wanted to know if I came back next week, could I purchase some of her snacks to take back to the living area? She said no. I will make you some snacks, and you don't have to pay. I will make you snacks for you. And of course I wasn't gonna have that. I wasn't gonna do that at all. But I came back the next week, and she had made me a whole little tray of dates and honey. And I think there were like 20 of them in there. And Larry, I took those things back to the CHU. The CHU is the containerized housing unit, for short. And I ate the entire tray at one sitting, not understanding that dates are kind of like prunes. They kind of get things moving, if you know what I mean. And I'm going to tell you, the next 12 hours was not a good 12 hours, but if you know what I mean. But KL4NUE, KK4JBQ, go ahead, Larry.
That was a lesson that you'll never forget, I suppose. Yes. And if you were aware of the ingredients, the content, it's always, of course, I know it was a situation you were in, and the fact that was an incredible occasion for you. Donna can't understand why I'm not big on sweets. But then I grew up we were poor, just to put it plain. And it was an occasion to have anything with sugar in it, anything sweet. We ate well, us kids, we ate fine, but it was just hearty food that you burn up a lot of energy as a kid. But I had one weakness, bubble gum. I love bubble gum. And that's the only reason that I insisted that the parents chose to call it. Other people call it an allowance, that they had another name for it. Can't recall that right now. But it was like a dime a week. And bubblegum was a penny at the time. And so I could get 10 pieces of bubblegum, and that would last me all week. Well, anyway. Yeah, you should go easy where dates are concerned. That was pretty powerful, I imagine. But every once in a while, you need a good gosh, I'm having trouble with the words. You need a good renewing. Let's call it that. And that's good. I mean, it's fine that you can talk about these things. I had some friends in the Vietnam War who could not talk about their time in service. Well, they couldn't without hesitating, without absolutely, it just looked like they froze because they were so deep in an experience and didn't have the words to relate the experience, you know, deep in the thought of it. It was difficult, and I'm sure you're acquainted with folks like that too. My father-in-law, one Thanksgiving, we got around to speaking of his time in France in World War II, and he was okay for about 2 minutes, and then he began to cry right there at the table. And I learned in a pretty tough way, I learned to respect and not to pry. And for JBQ with KO4NUE, good conversation. Well, yeah, that's enough said about all that. KK4JBQ.
So just so I'm clear here is that It has been a difficult journey. It really has. And just to be straight up honest with you, the second deployment was much worse than the first. It was pretty brutal at times. And there are a lot of it that I just don't like to think about or talk about. But as time goes on, and I guess about 2 years ago I made the switch that I've refused to allow things like that to define my transparency. I'm not ashamed to admit it all. I struggled and it was difficult when I came home. Not at all. I have never been a person that, I don't give out extremely personal information, but as far as my experiences go, I'm not going to let that define me at all. You know, the interesting thing is on both deployments, I carried a leather bound journal with me, and I wrote in those journals not every day, but most days was every day. Some of it's difficult to go back and read, but at a minimum every 3 days about what we were experiencing and what I was experiencing as an individual and as a unit, and just, you know. So what kind of changed my mind with that is that when I came home from the second deployment, I was sitting at the table. It was my second day back, and I was sitting at the table with my kids and wife and was trying to find a way to explain to my children what some of the things I had experienced. And one of the stories that I was trying to tell, and you hit it exactly on the head, talking about your father-in-law in France, is that sometimes there are no words. Words cannot convey what you feel emotionally or what you have experienced. So I am explaining to them one of the worst nights of my life. And in the middle of the conversation, my second child, Perry, looks at Abby, my daughter, and says, "Hey, don't hog the mustard. I need the mustard for my hot dog." And I think at that point I realized that I don't have an issue discussing it. It's just they're not going to understand because my first response was, "Well, I'm not explaining this correctly because he's worried about mustard and not what I'm trying to tell him." And I don't know, as time went on, I realized that it's not about the mustard. There's just no words to describe sometimes. And I refuse to let that define me. I can't do it. I won't do it. And I'm pretty transparent. I don't have issues discussing my experience at all. I mean, I don't want to get into gore and stuff like that, but just experiences as an individual and things that I experienced there were, quite honestly, life-changing. But I'm here, and I didn't know it at the time, but now I know I'm a better person for it, and proud of my service. I earned a Bronze Star on the last deployment. It was a difficult time, but you learn a lot about yourself in situations like that, and I mean a lot. You don't think your mind and body can do things that it can do, and that's pretty helpful to know. So that's a precursor to some of the questions that I ask and how I put myself out there on a public radio, is because if people want to make fun of, you know, about my IQ and this, that, and the other, or whatever, because I ask questions, then let them. I've had far worse people try to do far worse things to me than to worry about things like that. So I'm going to learn, and I'm going to ask, and I'm going to try to do. And if I fail, hey, I fail. Just like Gary says, that all that does is tells you and everybody else that you're human, and I certainly am that. But, you know, Larry, I don't want to bore you with things, stories like that. I mean, that's not something you may not be interested in, and that's, you know, that's fine. But I don't, you know, I don't let things like that define me. I know. Hang on. At the end of the day, I finally came to the conclusion with the children that the only way they would ever understand is if they experienced what their dad experienced. And I would not want that for my children, ever. Ever. It's just enough for them to know that Dad did. And that provided a means for my family financially to make it. And that's just my role. That's every dad's role. When I'm dead and gone, they can look through the journals and they can find out then. But I learned real quick that it's, you know, let's just focus on bigger and better things and do what I gotta do to put that behind me. And that took a long time, a real long time, but, you know, that's kind of the thing with the engine building and ham radio and this, that, and the other, is that I guess some of it's a distraction, and some of it is that I've got something to focus on and something to do differently. But out of all of the bad, there was a lot of good and a lot of funny stories and a lot of funny circumstances that, you know, I have a issue focusing on those at all and sharing those, you know. And some of them are bad experiences that are funny, you know. But KO4NUE and KK4JBQ.
Chat, KK4JBQ. As I listen to you, I learn things. And if I have one pride that I afford myself, it is to listen to people and to hear the person inside, the little person. I take it from some of the things that you said that I think one way you put it was, I'm a big boy. I laughed at that. Well, there's a little person inside of you too. We all have that individual. The fact that you kept journals, it led me into a thought that is, uh, it's helpful if you've lived through tragedy, if you've lived through pain, if you've lived through shared loss. It's good to do that. This is what humans do. And the very finest humans come out of it better off. And yet, as time moves along, you move along inside this bubble that we all live in, this moment in time. It's sometimes necessary to put those things, like to put an end to the struggle and to close the chapter in this book that you're writing, the whole, you know, I've talked to people and they call it, I put that book up on a shelf. So they're writing many books as they move through life, but we all write one big one. Maybe it's several volumes. Maybe that's the way to look at it. But it's helpful to do that, because reliving, you're at a disadvantage if you relive. You can't change the history that you know to be true. You would have it be different. Oh, sure. In many cases, you would have it be different, but you can't. You know the beginning, the middle, and the end. And so it happened that way once, and maybe it was tragic. Maybe there was terrible loss, and maybe the trauma was difficult to deal with. Well, you have. You already have dealt with it. To put oneself through that again is not advisable, I suppose. And so you can put it in a safe place, this chapter or this volume, and put it up on the shelf and let it stay there. You're made up of so much more than those things, and so you're so much more interesting than those things. That you came through it one of the most demanding building of a human being is to put them through war or conflict, stressful stress, KK4JBQ. So I feel fortunate and privileged to hear what you shared with me. I am, and I am so thankful that folks like you stepped up and said, I'll serve. It's what I'll do for my country and for my countrymen. That's what it's all about. KK4JBQ.
Good, Larry. That's not necessary, but I really do appreciate it. That makes me feel good, and, you know, but I, before my daughter went to college, and I've got the journals and a little book cover over there, cabinet, because I don't want anything to happen to them. Sometimes I go back and read through them and whatnot, but she was, before she went to Clemson, she was, you know, looking around in the cabinets, and she had one of them in her hands and was, you know, got a little leather strap that wraps around it 3 or 4 times. And I didn't want the paper cover or hard cover because it just, the environment's just so rough. So I paid extra to get the leather covered, and glad I did. But at any rate, she had the string in her hand, and I said, what are you doing, baby girl? And she says, well, I thought about, you know, trying to, if you don't mind, read through some of your journals for a little bit. And I said, well, I expect you old enough to understand some of the stuff you read in there. I said, but, you know, why don't we just wait? Why don't we just wait a while? And I said, if when something happens to me, I said, I want you to, you take the journals. I said, because might not, you know, understand what they are. Now, I know as a father that they're going to experience a lot of things in life, that there's some answers to those questions in that journal, but they just so busy they can't slow down sometimes for, you know, whatever situation they're in. But she likes to read, and she's like me. She likes to absorb things, and she's kind of transparent about talking through things and this, that, and the other. So I expect she'll be the one that'll probably end up having control of, but she'll probably be the one too that's just going to be, oh my goodness, I had no idea, and probably won't ever say anything in the world to her brothers about it, which that's fine too, but I don't know. I tell you though, Larry, I learned a lot about people. I've learned a lot about this world. Learned a lot about good and evil. And I think that was one of the most important lessons I learned. Just the struggle between good and evil. And I don't mean as a soldier. I just mean just experiencing people that want to do horrible things, and that is a process that you cannot process in your brain very well at all. And I quit trying, because I remember my wife telling me one time after I hadn't been home long, and I began to realize shortly after trying to tell the kids, you know, some of my experiences, that staying and dwelling on that kind of stuff, they suffer. And that's not right. That's not right for them. And I mean, I don't mind discussing it at all, but I refuse to let stuff like that define me as a person. I'm just not going to do it, and, you know, I can skip around the bad parts, but, you know, just, I don't know, it's an amazing, I was glad to be a part of it, and I'll just be straight up honest and tell you that sometimes you hear somebody say, well, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. Well, I don't know about that. I think there's some things we all could have done differently. And I'm not ashamed to admit, yeah, I think there's a few things I would change, you know. But I don't know, maybe one night I'll get some, there's some really good stories in there actually, and some pretty funny stuff. And I remember one day talking with an Iraqi general, and he was complaining about something, just some off the wall something. Generals kind of do that, you know. We were at the Marble Palace, which is Saddam Hussein's main palace, and I was tired, grumpy. I had been on a flight for I don't know how many days just trying to get there for this crazy meeting, and I didn't know what to say to the man. I mean, I'm from Campobello. I don't know anything about governing the whole populace and controlling a whole division. I don't know anything about that. I just have my company that I'm responsible for. And I just told him, I didn't know what else to tell the man, but I just said, do you know Lewis Hightower, which is my grandfather? And of course he was dead at the time. But and he just looked at me like, who? And I said, well, he's my grandfather. I said, I wish y'all could meet. And I guess that was my way of politely telling him to be quiet. I don't really want to hear all this. So that's the only way I knew to change the subject. And I mean, it worked. But I don't know. I don't even know really what to say. But I will tell you this. Let me tell you this. It's a repeater cycle. My cousin on my mother's side, his name is Wally Whitmire. He was a commander for one of the units that cycled in through the country. And I'm not that close with my mother's side of the family, but he is my cousin. And he came through, he cycled through our COB, because you have groups of battalions that'll move from FOB to FOB to get to where they're wanting to go do their mission. And he came through, and I met him in the chow hall. Was about three people behind him, and I thought, man, he looks familiar. And it was the day before Thanksgiving, and I tell you, that was an amazing thing. We had lost touch over the years, and like I said, not that close, but the next day we went and had the Thanksgiving meal, and that was quite an experience. That was the trip that Hillary Clinton came to our FOB on the first deployment and wanted to so-called visit the troops. I won't get into all that, but needless to say, we were about three tables away from Hillary Clinton when she came to visit, and oh man, what a day. But my point is, you know, we got to meet up, and just a really interesting dynamic to not be close family members, and then all of a sudden, you know, we were in the moment, in other words.
KK4JBQ, I guess you could say that you knew of each other as you were growing up, and then you were thrown into the same sandbox. Perhaps got a little bit reacquainted, but I can only imagine that your purpose made expanding your relationship, your understanding of the man, made that difficult because you're so purpose-driven. Am I wrong? KK4JBQ.
Yeah, you're right. I got to have a purpose. There's no purpose, then there's nothing. I mean, you hit it on the head. So, one other story, and then I'm gonna call it quits, and I'm gonna send you a picture of this. So check your email sometime. I'm not gonna send it tonight, but I'll send it tomorrow or Sunday. But so on the first deployment, we were right outside of the border between Iraq and Kuwait, and we'd been there for 10-12 months, and we just set up a communication grid there, and as soldiers cycled through, you know, they could call forward units or call or email home or whatever, you know, and it was all secure with encryption and all that. But point is, we'd been there for 10 months. So we took pallets left over from that handles, you know, materials. We collected a bunch of pallets and got our hands on some Iraqi plywood. Well, the plywood over there is not like plywood here. We have veneer that is glued together in opposing grain, and the sheets are 4 foot by 8 foot. But over there, their plywood is 5 foot by 9.5. It's metric something. And they have 1 inch planks, 3 inches wide, glued between two pieces of veneer. So in other words, there's not really an opposing grain. So it's really strong one way, but the other way it's not so strong because of the wooden slatting in between. But anyway, we stacked these plywood, nailed this plywood down to all these pallets, and basically just picked the tent up and set the tent over that platform so we could have, when we got up on our cots, we wasn't on the bare earth. So we'd been there about 10 months, and I would get up in the morning, and swing my legs around off of the cot, and had a little coffee maker there in the tent. I'd make a cup of pot of coffee and just try to wake up before I started my day. And I'm sitting there with my feet on this plywood floor, and I got my head, you know, real drowsy from a good night's sleep, and I looked down on the plywood, and I noticed there was a hole in the floor. And I thought, man, I've been here so long that my boots have wore a hole in this plywood. I have got to get out of here. I've been here way too long. And I'm looking down on the floor, and I see this tongue, like in your mouth tongue. I don't know, it's about 3/8 of an inch or half inch round. And it's about 8 inches long. And it comes up out of the hole and bends 90 degrees and just does a 360 degree sweep on the floor and goes right back in the hole. Hang on. The platoon sergeant there bunking beside me. And I stood up on the cot and I said, Gerald, come over here. You got to see this. Am I seeing things or what? And we waited there for a few minutes, and sure enough, here comes this big long tongue comes up out of the floor again, and it wiggles around a little bit, and I mean, Larry, it's good 6 inches long, and it goes back down through the hole in the floor. And Gerald says, "My gosh, what is that?" And I said, "Man, I don't know, but it's in my living area. I find out what this thing is." So the lieutenant says, "Come on, Sergeant, we got to go. We can deal with that later. We got things we got to do today." So out the door we went. So we go over to the headquarters tent, and I'm fixing to go in the headquarters tent to find out what my assignments were for today. And I see this big yellow lizard. I don't know, he's probably 2.5 feet long. Big old joker. And he comes running out from under the tent and runs into a big hole in the ground about 100 yards away. And I thought, okay, that's what it is, one of them yellow lizards. They're everywhere out there. So we went on to the chow hall, and I picked up a little box of those frosted flakes that come in a little cardboard pack. You just, with a plastic bag, and you just open the bag and the cardboard box, pour your milk straight in it, and you can eat it out of that. So I started going getting boxes of those frosted flakes and sprinkle them on the floor. And we'd all sit around in the morning and drinking our coffee, all the leadership, and we'd watch this lizard pick all this frosted flakes off of the floor. And then after a week or so, we noticed that the hole started getting bigger. And it got to where you could see his eye under the floor. And I think at that point, it just got too creepy. I just said, he's gnawing at the hole, and he's going to get in the tent. And I just, you know, I'm just not going to have that. So we was going to trap him. We was going to catch him and get him out from under the floor. So we rigged up some kind of noose trap or something. I forget exactly what it is we used to call it, but we did catch him. And I never forget, it was on a Sunday. On Sundays, you could wear civilian clothes. So I had packed me one set of Oshkosh bib overalls and my work boots. And on Sundays, I'd wear a T-shirt and those bib overalls. Kind of keeps you sane, if you know what I mean. So I have got a picture of me standing outside of this tent with this, I'd say he's probably 3 foot, 2.5 to 3 feet long, of this big yellow lizard that, I don't know, we fed for weeks, but what we figured he was doing was eating the rats that were under all the tents. And I guess that was his food source. But yeah, it's just the strangest thing. But I'm gonna email a picture of it so you can see. I mean, this thing is evil looking. But I got the proudest look on my face because I caught this stinking lizard, and I ain't no telling what kind of diseases he carried. But I got him.
That fellow was doing you a favor. He was eating the rats, but he took it just one step too far by trying to widen that hole and get in there with you. That is funny. That is really funny. Oh my! I can't think of any parallel that I have experienced. That's to have a pet under the floor. I mean, I heard stories when I was young about trolls that lived under bridges, but this is for real. KK4JPQ.
We keep in touch. He was a lot younger than me. And he loved Star Wars. And I was the company first sergeant. I was the one that had to be the hard one all the time. And he was a specialist. But everywhere I traveled, he went with me as my battle buddy. And we looked after one another and got to be pretty close, you know, despite the leadership and thing, you know. But so we had a system on our FOB called the Phalanx, and it was a radar unit, and our communication tropo scatter and tactical satellite, they handled data for the radar and this, that, and the other. Well, it's hooked to a 20 millimeter, 25 millimeter radar control Gatling gun, pretty much. And when rockets or mortars would come in, the radar would locate it and would just shoot them out of the sky. I mean, you can Google it and see how the thing works. But it's a horrific sound. But there would be an alarm that would go off to try to give you some pre-warning. But, I mean, it was like the alarm would go off, and then like a second later, you know, it's going off. And it looks like a fire-breathing dragon. You can check it out on YouTube. It's spelled T-H-A-L, Phalanx, I think, yeah. Anyway, so when the alarm goes off and the Phalanx goes off, you get this horrible alarm that goes off that is just really horrible sounding, and that's the intent. So everybody leaves the chute, and we get in these concrete bunkers, and you stay there till you get the all clear. You know, unless there's a perimeter breach or something, and then that's a different situation. But so we're in the bunkers. We'd been there about 30, 40 minutes. There's a whole lot of nervous tension when you're in there with other people. And it doesn't matter what, I mean, if you're in your PJs, then you come with your helmet and your rifle and your PJs. Just get to the bunker. And so I'm sitting at the bunker. We've been in there 30, 40 minutes, and usually 30, 40 minutes we get all clear. So it was close to being all clear time. And I look outside of the bunker across from me, and there is a stormtrooper, like off of Star Wars. You know, the white stormtrooper guys got the stormtrooper helmet, and, I guess it'd be a generational thing if you don't know what they are. But basically a soldier in a white battle suit, armor, that kind of stuff. Well, Cubby had one shipped from home. His dad shipped it to him. And we're out in this bunker. And I look out, and soldiers everywhere. And he's out there dancing in a stormtrooper suit, solid white, with his rifle. And I mean, it's just the funniest thing. I guess maybe you just had to be there. But, I can't believe I got off on some of these stories. But anyway, let me get it moving toward closing it out. It's 2 minutes after 12, and so KL4NUE KK4JBQ. Go ahead and take it, Larry, and then I'll close it out.